This is the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5. Speak your mind. Speak your mind.
We continue our discussions. 16 days of activism today. The public's role in preventing human trafficking. I have a full studio this morning because the topic this morning, we have a lot to discuss. And with us, we have Tanesha Haynes. I got it correct this morning. Tanesha Haynes, case manager at International Organization for Migration. Zeke Bihari.
Yes.
I got that correct as well. Project manager at International Organization. And joining us as well, we have Ken Ramdan, project leader, Families in Action. Good morning to you all. And welcome to our studios. Nice to have you guys with us here this morning. We've been having several discussions for this 16 days of activism as GML partnered with the UN and the relevant agencies to discuss some of the things related to gender-based violence. This morning's topic is a pretty interesting one because when we speak of domestic violence, gender-based violence, we don't necessarily make the link between human trafficking and how they can be related or how they are related, in fact. But just before we get into the nitty-gritty of our discussion, I want to get a bit of information on this organization, International Organization for Migration. Who wants to go? Tell us what this is about.
Good morning to all you listening public. So the International Organization for Migration is considered to be the leading organization in the field of migration. And we work with the government and non-governmental partners and really are dedicated to promoting humane and orderly migration for the benefit of all. And how we do this, IOM provides services and advice to governments and migrants and try to search for practical solutions to migration problems. And ideally, we work in four broad areas of migration management, and that is looking at migration and development, facilitating migration, regulating migration, as well as looking at forced migration. So how we can work with the government, but also with the migrants themselves.
Well, the issue of human trafficking and the information you have available. We've had some stories that raised a couple eyebrows in the not-too-distant past, and we've been seeing reports, we've been reading in the newspapers, we've been listening to the police, we've been seeing some cases before the courts and everything else. How bad is the situation? Do we really have a bad situation? What are the statistics telling us about the issue of human trafficking in this country?
So what we'd want to start off by saying is that human trafficking is, first of all, not an individual country problem.
Right.
It is a global crisis, and this is linked with increasing globalization, and it is intertwined, yes, with illegal immigration, transnational crime, human smuggling. But to say that it is just an individual problem to Trinidad and Tobago, it is not. Countries are usually categorized as either a transit, a source, or a destination country. And so there are different steps or processes linked with it. In terms of the statistics for Trinidad and Tobago, I mean, I don't have that information on hand with me at this time. But to say that we continue to work along, I mean, one case sometimes is sufficient enough to pay attention to it. And so the government, as well as organizations such as IOM, continue to work together to address the issue.
If anybody would like to add anything to that.
So just to add to what Zeke said, basically, because of the nature of human trafficking, that it's a gross violation of human rights, one case is too much. So in terms of numbers, and as we see the problem moving forward, we have been seeing increases in terms of the numbers of victims being identified. And we know that it's a serious problem throughout the country, throughout the world. And that's why there are different levels in terms of ratings for countries, how we address the issue of human trafficking. Right now, Trinidad and Tobago, our position, we have to consider it closely, because it suggests that we need to do more as it relates to addressing the issue of trafficking at the national level.
What constitutes human trafficking? Because we've been hearing of persons being kidnapped and brought to the country. We've been hearing of people being fooled through make-work schemes and all these kinds of things. Explain some of that to the listener, of what constitutes someone being trafficked.
So in order for human trafficking to take place, the case has to meet three specific elements.
Right.
And that's the activity, which has to include recruitment. So whether it be through Facebook or through a family friend or someone who is out there, or just a career services where they're advertising jobs. Mm-hmm. That would be considered recruitment. It can be transportation where you move from one place to another. It can also include harboring, and harboring has to do with providing shelter. So once you're staying in a specific place, all of these will be considered an activity under human trafficking. And then we move to the means. How are you being controlled? It can be through threats. It can also be through fraud, right? It can also be through deception. Once these elements take place, that's the activity so far, the means, and then that now leads to an action. What are we doing these things for? If it's for exploitation. So exploitation can take place in terms of sexual exploitation as well as labor exploitation. So once you have the three elements, if you have been deceived or there is recruitment, so you apply for this agency to get a job. And then when it is you're coming to do, let's just say, nursing, and once you arrive in Trinidad or you arrive in whatever country, you are now taken against your will and you're forced to do something in terms of domestic work. So you're placed in a home and you have to clean for this family. You're not being paid. You're not being allowed to leave. And this is not something that you have agreed to. Those three elements will now suggest that you have become a victim of trafficking.
Do we have cases of those identified here at home? I mean, I might be asking the obvious question, but we want to get into some nitty-gritty details here.
Yeah, we definitely do have cases of confirmed victims of trafficking in Trinidad and Tobago. And it includes victims who are or who have been recruited not just for labor exploitation, but also for sexual exploitation as well.
Mm. And when these cases are identified, what happens?
So the first thing we do when the cases are identified, ideally the identification should take place from the national agency, which would be the counter-trafficking unit. And once they confirm a victim of trafficking, the first thing you want to do is to ensure that the victim has access to certain types of support. So law enforcement will come in, they will do their part in terms of getting evidence and going through the prosecution stage. But there is also the protection element, which mm-hmm. means that the victim should have access to certain services, which means we need to make sure they have proper housing or safe housing, safe accommodation. We need to make sure that they have access to mental health and psychosocial support. And that's something that we often take for granted, but that's one of the key things in terms of their recovery. Mm-hmm. We also have to make sure that they have access to basic needs in terms of food, being able to achieve or access personal items, also legal representation to help guide them through the process. So all of these are key things that are supposed to be provided by government agencies or the state once a victim is identified.
We'll get Mr. Ramlan in the conversation pretty soon about educating, but I just want to, do we have a tier listing or a category rating of reasons why people are trafficked into the country or out of the country or however it may be?
Yeah. So, yes, there are different push and pull factors around the world. And in terms of why persons may be, you know, targeted, for example, you can look at different, well, there are the two sides of it. One, you look at recruiters themselves have their own tactics. That is one. So they may look at persons who are invulnerable, you know, a vulnerable population or in a vulnerable position. So that might be if they have some sort of substance use disorder or they're homeless youth. For example, if they are runaways or even have mental health disorders, they can take advantage of that. But then in itself, they would utilize tactics such as false promises, try to gain trust for the purpose of control of the person, use force, and may even, in some cases, promise some sort of love or affection. So it is, as Tanisha would have mentioned, it is a process that they take where they can take you from activity to means to purpose. You know, it is about fraud, it is about deception. And just to also go back on one issue that she mentioned when she spoke about forms of exploitation, sometimes the first image or perception persons have of human trafficking are just those who are involved in either the sexual exploitation, such as prostitution or even just labor. But there are other ways as well and other forms of exploitation that, you know, even us in our everyday lives may take for granted and not necessarily look at. So, for example, persons may be forced into begging. Forced or coerced begging is a form of exploitation where you may have a child, for example, go out onto the streets to perform that duty of begging for the purpose of bringing back. I mean, the child should be in school. It's not something the child would want to do, but it's being forced to be there. You may have those, it's not seen in our specific geographic region right now, but sometimes you have child soldiers or children being used for the purpose of armed conflict. Some women are being used as surrogate mothers or even to have forced pregnancies, for example. These are all different types of human trafficking forms of exploitation. And so we have to also be mindful of that. It's not just within the face of sexual exploitation, which is sometimes given more prominence in the public domain.
We have so much more to discuss, and I really want to get now into the discussion about educating people, educating those who are at risk and those who may necessarily think to themselves, well, I know someone who might be at risk or someone who was in a situation that needs to be highlighted. But we need to take a couple of quick messages before we do that. And when we get back, of course, we may or may not include some of your calls because we've got so much to discuss. As we continue to look at this issue here, the public's role in preventing human trafficking on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Just about 23 minutes again before we wrap. Govan comes in at that time. Continuing our discussion, the public's role in preventing human trafficking. Let's speak now to our third guest in studio, Ken Ramdan, project lead, Families in Action. Before we get into the heavy stuff, tell us about Families in Action.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for having me here, and good morning to the general listening public. Well, Families in Action, we're an NGO. We started in 1988. Our single focus at that point was really about helping and supporting persons addicted to drugs and their families, but we realized that in addressing that issue, we had to also treat with the families. So what we've done is that we focused on really transforming individuals, families, and organizations across global communities through quality services that are solution-focused and, of course, people-driven. So how do we do that? We really do it through counseling, domestic violence support, employee assistance, and workplace support, parenting education, and youth education targeted at diverse populations.
Let's talk about education a bit. And I'm assuming that education would relate to identifying, in some instances, what constitutes the red flags that people need to look out for. Social media has created a platform that makes it very, very simple for people to be taken advantage of. And human traffickers have used social media and the ability to be almost invisible to their advantage. And we've seen it played out here at home. And during the break, we were speaking that human trafficking and issues that are related are not necessarily cross-border all the time. Explain some of that to the people listening in to us as to how serious the situation is.
Well, I could share that what we would identify in terms of educating the public would be that you're right by saying that people utilize social media for a lot of different reasons, for good and for bad. The public has to be aware of a lot of things. One, the social media allows a lot of people to hide behind something. Mm-hmm. So they also feel a need to be able to share more than even from their personal life. So sometimes there are predators out there looking, searching, scouring, identifying, collecting data and information on persons that you may not even be aware that you have put stuff in the public. And an example could be you could be looking for somebody and don't know their name, but just because they're connected to somebody else, you could find out a lot of information about them. So I would say definitely one of the things that the public has to be aware of, be very careful about what information you make public on social media. Because what people fail to realize as well is that once you put information up on social media, the information is no longer yours.
Yeah.
You have access to it, and so does a lot of other people.
It may seem given that, well, you know, this and this, anybody can access your information. There's something people do, and I see it often. And I had a discussion with someone who almost got themselves in a lot of trouble. This thing about checking in and about posting where you are and your movements. I'm leaving home now, and I'm heading here, and I'm going there now. And it's part of the culture. It's children, young ones, everybody's into this thing, checking in where I'm going, when I'm going to be there, and how long I'm going to be there for, who I'm going to be there with, and all of this kind of thing. And it's providing information in a public domain where you really can't regulate who has access to that information and how they're going to use it, because nobody knows who the next victim is. And that's how vast the internet is. And the cases that we have here at home and the work that you all are doing, how much of a role is social media playing in people falling victim?
So IOM, that is, we recently conducted a situational analysis. And what our situational analysis revealed was that one of the main forms of recruitment is done through social media. So things in terms of Facebook, that's how it is traffickers get their information out there. And it's important, especially for young persons or anybody who's navigating the social media platform, that they're aware of how to spot and how to identify key things that will trigger, hey, this is a trafficker, or I could be falling into a trap that I may become a victim of trafficking. So making sure you do proper research. So if it's someone who's reaching out and saying, hi, so I have this job opportunity, I see you're interested in modeling, or I see you're interested in, you know, being an online sensational person, then we have to take those steps in terms of, what do I know about this agency? Do some background checks. Now, the thing about it is some of these trafficking rings are so elaborate that you may do a background check and you can find a trace. So it's important that when you're doing this, you also try to reach out to persons who have been identified as key persons working with these organizations, just to confirm that, you know, this is actually an established organization and it's not someone who's out there trying to lure me in so I can fall prey to trafficking.
Oh, that's taking into consideration the person or the entity puts up a front as a business.
Correct, and that's what sometimes takes place.
What happens when you have individuals approaching individuals? Because relationships, a lot of relationships are formed through social media. How do you know whether this person is legit or not, or you're setting yourself up for something very, very dangerous?
And that's always a risk that can take place once it is you are meeting someone online. And it's important that once you're establishing or you're going to meet someone, I would suggest or I would recommend that you don't do these things alone. And it's always important, especially for young people. Yes, you may be interested in someone and you're venturing out, but you don't tell anyone that, okay, I'm going to meet this person, this is the time, this is the place I'm meeting them, and you're now at an increased risk. But it's better once it is someone knows who you are, especially if you're meeting someone for the first time, that you go with a parent or you go with somebody who's a guardian or somebody who's senior who can be there to provide support and protection.
And just going back to even something that Ken would have mentioned before about, you know, what we put out on social media that is there for everyone. I mean, you know that traffickers would often target people who are going through a difficult time or who lack some sort of strong support system. And so, you know, these are things that persons tend to put up. You know, they tend to express their feelings and so on. And so when traffickers see someone, again, it puts us back at, okay, who my target should be? Someone who's vulnerable, somebody who's now in a, you know, a depressed state. And that is also something that you can do for yourself. Be careful in what you put out, because information can be collected and analyzed in different ways. Yes, the law enforcement does one set of analyzing, but also recruiters and traffickers do their own analyzing as well, and we have to always be mindful of that as well.
I've seen, and in this business, you're exposed to so many situations because people speak to you about what they're confronted with. Sometimes people call and ask for it's long, and you get involved one way or the other in some of the experiences that people have. There are people who create an entire approach based on what you put out on social media.
That's correct. Yeah.
If you have just lost a loved one, there are people who empathize with you even though they've never lost one. Mm-hmm. Or a broken relationship, you get horn, as we say in this country, and you're pouring your heart out on social media, they are there as the shoulder to cry on, even though it's just a ploy. I've seen it happen so many times. For the parents listening into us, let's just say we want to look at preventing younger people from falling victim. And social media is a very difficult thing to police because you hide and you don't tell this one, and you're doing things secret and you're deleting whatever else. And it's a tough thing. But there are parents, I'm sure, who are listening into us who have children who are at that age that might be a potential victim for human trafficking. Where do they begin?
So That's a great question, and it's not a one answer for everything. But what I can encourage parents to know is this. If you don't have a communicative relationship openly with your child, bet your bottom dollar somebody else is doing it. Okay. So if you aren't providing a space where they can feel safe to come and share, somebody else will provide that for you. And I don't know how parents feel about it, but I don't know if you trust that other person who's this question mark identity, no face, no real name, no particular characteristic, we don't know, versus you. So I would say paramount to parenting, parents, please encourage your children to be able to come and speak to you about something, even if it's something you do not know the answer to. Even if it's something you don't feel like you have the necessary skills or tips, there are agencies like Families Action. We do parenting education programs. We could provide that. But you could also just research, just like we were saying here, do your checks online. The other thing I would encourage parents to do is this: be smarter than your children. And I could ask the question, when you were a child, did you feel like you were smarter than your parents? Most times, yes. You see, you're smiling because you know. Yeah,
it's not about being smarter. It's about listen. Well, me and we really know what I do. Right. You understand?
So it should be that the parents know that you are doing that.
Right.
We're allowing you to go through to that stage, and that's the kind of relationship. I know, you know, but I'm still trying to make sure that you go through the experience on your own. But I'm there to support. So children just need to know my parent is supporting. So sometimes a parent needs to be very open with a topic that they may not be comfortable with. Right, and if they don't know, go research. The other thing is that technology is so advanced.
It is.
Parents, I would say this, please do not be afraid of it. Please learn it, because a simple thing like you could be hovering over your child while they're doing homework, and as soon as you turn your back, it's control tab and go to the next one, and they're looking at something. As soon as you come back, two keys, and they go back again, and they're like, well, I see the screen flicker, but I wasn't sure what went on, and you not sure what really going on in your head. So they could be playing games with you and you don't even know.
I have personal first-hand experience with that. I have a daughter. She turned 12 in October, and she has always been on, from the age of 3, she's been on social media, well, not social media, but she's been on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten to this stage now where there are videos that they want to watch and all of these kinds of things. And it's a tough task to keep policing that and to keep monitoring what they are looking at, because you don't want them to start looking at the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one instance many, many years ago, there was a video, these videos keep popping up, and then there are suggestions, and they click on the suggestion, and it takes them way out of where they started. Mm-hmm. And a video popped up that was not necessarily, they didn't have the kind of language that I think she should have been listening to at the point in time, but it came up. And when it came up, the audio was loud. And from the moment it came on, she knew that this was something she wasn't supposed to be looking at. And I could see the fluster in her to try to get it off.
Mm.
Now, that is magnified 100 times when you have a child who is doing something that does not want to get caught.
Mm.
And I don't know how possible it is to really and truly to police this all 100%, but I'm assuming the dialogue and the relationship with your child is the only mechanism you have at this point in time to try to give your child as much guidance as they need.
So I will just emphasize that point you made there. The relationship is what you have to rely on. That trust, knowing that we have this connection, this dynamic, because I cannot police you 24/7. And at some point when they reach the stage of adolescence, they are now heavily influenced by their peers. So what they're looking at and what's trending on social media is something that will pull them. But you have to know that what you've instilled, what you've put out, what you've done in parenting allows for that dynamic of trust to happen, that this child understands what they are about, what they want. So this is where you also have to give them opportunities to figure out who they are in terms of their identity. Who am I in this world? How am I contributing to society in Trinidad and Tobago? What are my likes? What are my dislikes that I can feel confident about? And supported by, of course, by the parents. And if the child is saying that they're interested in something and you're saying, I don't think that's a good fit, it could actually be that, how about we try it? I'm here to support. So even if you don't like it, we could go to something else.
Yeah. And we're talking about human trafficking, but this is just another example of my interactions with my child and how dangerous the internet is. And she found out that the hard way. There was this game that they have, Roblox. It's a big deal. And you had to buy these Roblox and all that kind of thing and you whatever else. And eventually, one day somebody hacked her account and took everything. So that's a lesson for her. She learned pretty early that you don't trust nobody on the internet, because things can happen. We need to take a couple quick messages. But when we get back, we'll wrap up our discussion and give people the final bits of advice that they need on this very interesting topic, the public's role in preventing human trafficking, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Almost to the end of our time here this morning. lady and a gentleman, as we wrap up our discussion this morning, it's amazing how quickly time flew by. And there's so much more that we can discuss on this matter. Let's leave people with some advice as to what are some of the things they should look out for, and when these red flags are raised, who do they get in touch with?
So just some tips or some really key indicators for persons who may be around and, you know, you may come in contact with a victim. Some of the things you look for is if they're living with their employer. So where they work and where they live, it's the same place. Poor living conditions, an inability to speak to the individual alone. So they're always with someone. They're not allowed to leave on their own. They're always accompanied. Another thing would be, if it is their answers or any questions you ask, it appears to be scripted. So if you ask a question, they answer the same thing. And if you ask something they may not have an answer to, they stay quiet. So it means that there's only specific information they're allowed to give. Another thing might be that the employer or somebody else is holding their documentation, so they don't have access to their passports or any identification documents. Signs of physical abuse, definitely. And also in terms of if they always seem to be submissive or fearful or afraid to engage with anyone. So these are some telltale signs in terms of some key indicators of trafficking. And it's important for sometimes the public, you know, you can ask questions, but even in asking questions, you have to be aware in terms of how you engage the victim. So it's important to think about, is this a safe time? Am I going to put this person at more risk? And if it is, the answer is, I can help, or there is something that I can do, and I can engage the victim alone in a private space. Some of the things you want to ask is, can you leave your job if you want? Can you go? Come and go as you please, right? Have you been hurt or threatened by your employer, or is somebody hurting or threatening you or your family members? Where do you eat and sleep? So these are some key questions we can ask, and based on the answers, we can determine if the person is a victim of trafficking. And once that is done, then the next step is to reach out to the authorities, and that would be the counter-trafficking unit. And the number to contact the counter-trafficking unit would be 800-4-CTU. That's 800-4-288. And you make a report. The report can be anonymous, but you need to give at least information of where the individual is located, some identifying factors, and some of the concerns that would have been raised when it is you engage the person.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Just to say, it kind of pretty sums up where we are now, that firstly, in terms of identifying victims of trafficking, we all just have to be educated about it.
Mm-hmm.
So learn about it, read about it, try to be well informed, both as parents, both as students. You know, share information about human trafficking with relatives and family members. We speak about other things, you know, whether it's politics or sports. I don't think it's taboo to also speak or have a discussion about an issue like human trafficking.
Yes, sir, right.
I think even encouraging schools to include human trafficking, maybe in their term programs, having a discussion with the authorities like CTU, like IOM, you know, we can come in and, you know, sensitize about the issue at hand. We spoke about even sometimes becoming a mentor to a young person or someone in need. Because of that issue of traffickers often targeting people who are going through a difficult time. You know, in terms of healthcare providers, sometimes if persons, like Tanisha said, are showing signs of abuse, while yes, one specific indicator may not say this is trafficking, sometimes a combination of it can. And so healthcare providers as first responders can be those to identify. And then even segments like this, journalists within your field, media plays an enormous role in shaping the perceptions and guiding the public conversation about human trafficking, which is something we spoke about. And so sometimes seeking out, you know, the media themselves, the best practices on how to effectively and responsibly report stories on human trafficking, I think is also important. And so, you know, at the end of the day, everyone has the potential to discover a human trafficking situation, and it is all our duty.
And so, I want to add anything to this?
Sure. And for me, I think as Families in Action is an implementing partner with IOM here, we provide that psychosocial support to victims of trafficking. I want to highlight the fact that one of the things that they really careful about is building trust, because that trust has been broken in the past. They have a lot of trauma that they deal with, and their confidence is shot, and they're trying to just build a life now without any kind of resources or help that they feel they don't have control over. So I would say to the public, a level of empathy, a level of empathy is necessary in treating with these persons, but also a level of awareness, because just the points that would have been shared earlier, if you aren't able to be aware, then we can't address the problem. So if you don't know it's existing, remember, it could actually happen in your home and you don't even know. So please be aware, check your family, check your community, and see if there are persons who fall within that that bill that would have been shared, and then go from there. You have the numbers to contact and reach out. Do something.
And this is where we're going to leave it. Thank you all so much for the information. It was a pretty interesting discussion. I think that we need to have some more, and hopefully that we do in the not-too-distant future. Thank you all once again.
Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.